Before we dive in, a shout out from our sponsor, Growth Collective. Are you truly satisfied with your ad buying partner? Do they bring constant creative ideas, consistently hit your targets, and offer impeccable service? If you're shaking your head no, let's talk about Growth Collective. The largest businesses are unlocking growth by focusing on what truly matters for brands in 2024. Constant creative output. Growth Collective has flipped the agency model upside down, being a creative first agency, partnered with a superb ad buying team with over $500 million of spend. They've worked with some of the largest DTC brands like Bomb Tech Golf, Hush Blankets, Crossnet, and Firebelly Tea. And they have a special offer for you, valued listener. Receive 30% off your first 3 months when you sign up for media buying with Growth Collective. You get top-notch creative, state-of-the-art dashboards and tracking, and a team that's truly dedicated to your brand in driving growth. And with a minimum value of $5,000 in savings, it's truly an offer too good to pass up. To claim this special offer, just visit wearegrowth.co and mention the unofficial Shopify podcast. That's wearegrowth.co. What's that, R2? You're looking for vintage collectible Star Wars toys? No, well, any kind will do. All right, yeah, that was quite the shtick I'm doing. But it's because today, we're going to talk about Star Wars toys, but in the context of selling them on Shopify. See, I ran into, I do office hours on occasion, and I got lucky to meet a man who was an early employee at Shopify, but has since, is walking the walk and has moved into full-time running a Shopify business, has done so successfully for several years now, selling vintage Star Wars toys and a few other collectibles. And it is just the most fascinating, fun, and in many ways, good-natured business. Like, the positive vibes in this episode, we'll see. We will start with simple. Who are you and what do you do?
So, hi, I'm Mike Freeman. I'm owner of Fourth Moon Toys, and I sell Star Wars stuff.
How long have you done that?
So officially, Fourth Moon Toys has been around for just over 4 years. But as a collector, I've kind of always been selling Star Wars stuff. I started back in the Usenet days selling Star Wars figures.
Usenet? What year was that?
That would have been probably like 95-ish.
Okay. Usenet 95. All right. I was but a baby.
Yeah, so I had like my whole route where I'd hit up the Toys R Us's and all those places and buy figures and then resell them to American collectors. And so I've always kind of bought and sold Star Wars stuff. And about 6 years ago or so, I was selling a lot to fund my own collecting and was kind of at an inflection point in our careers. And I decided to give it a chance at full time and was kind of like, I'll give this a year, see if it works out at all.
And what were you doing before this?
I worked in marketing my whole career, kind of worked my way up, worked digital strategy, regular strategy, and I ended up working at Shopify in Ottawa way back in the day.
Ottawa, that's HQ, right? The mothership?
Yeah, so that was employee number 51. Back in the day when it was pretty small. And so I worked on the Build a Business contest there. I managed that and ran that for a couple of years.
Wasn't the prize like go to Necker Island and hang out with Richard Branson?
Yes, that unfortunately was the year I left. It was the last year they did that one. I did some consulting on that one, but wasn't able to get on the trip or anything. But I did get to meet and work with, Tim Ferriss, Seth Godin, that was amazing, Mark Cuban, Gary Vaynerchuk, like all those guys that we had as consultants. And they were all like, what really surprised me is like those guys were all like so genuine and so wanted to help
other entrepreneurs. And so it was like amazing to work with them because, you know, we had a contract of, oh, you're going to give us this many hours to do blah, blah, blah. But all of them went like above and beyond, you know, and I know a lot of those entrepreneurs are still in contact with those guys after they had consultations and stuff with them.
That's amazing.
So I did Shopify for a while, then moved back to Toronto and went back to the agency life and worked for a few years there. And then my wife and I both took some time off due to like some medical surgeries that my wife had coming up. So we took about 2 years off, went through the whole medical thing, traveled with our daughter. And then that was kind of when it was like, okay, I need to get a real job or at least do something every day. And that's when I decided to give this a whirl full time.
In your background, it appears you've got a slat wall with Star Wars toys. This looks like a retail location.
Yes.
So you have a retail presence as well.
We do now. So as of November, we started retail. As I said, we've been online only for 4 years. And for really most of that time, only vintage Star Wars from 1977 to 86. So like super niche within a niche itself. And then this year, kind of the next step in growth to me seemed to go for retail. And to do that, I needed to expand the audience to kind of regular people that like Star Wars.
Normies.
So that meant moving into all the modern stuff. Because, you know, the vintage guys are like, you know, the nerdiest of the nerdiest hardcore fans into that stuff. Whereas the modern stuff, there's hardcore fans, but, you know, a mom can walk in here with, you know, a 10-year-old kid and find something cool that doesn't cost $1,000. So I knew I needed to expand into basically everything Star Wars.
So I greatly enjoy flea markets, and I understand the prices of the stuff is all over the place. Like I have paid $20 for X-Men figures from the 90s, and I also have a Ninja Turtle from the early 90s that I paid $200 for.
Yeah.
And so like the price is all over the place. Help me understand some of the price range on these vintage toys.
So on the vintage stuff, you know, it's going from anywhere from $5 for like a loose kind of beater figure, up to, I mean, I think the most expensive one we have in the display case right now is about $3,000, and that's a graded Luke Skywalker Farm Boy 12 pack. So kind of like the first release of Luke Skywalker on the card. And then, you know, we even have like display, store display items or things like that, that are probably even more. So it's quite a range. But you know, most things would fall within the kind of $100 to $500 category.
Have you ever seen or acquired a life-size R2-D2 replica?
I haven't. I've come close. I've been in negotiations actually for, Coke did a branded Cobot back in the 80s that they would bring to the stores. And I was really close to buying one from a guy, but it would have cost more in freight to get it up here than it was worth even. But I do have like some big stuff. We hung up some big TIE fighters and stuff on the ceiling. And I love big stuff myself. So I've got like a few store displays in my own collection that have kind of found their way into the store.
When Galaxy's Edge, Star Wars Land, opened at the Disney parks, there is a $25,000 life-size R2-D2. I was like really hoping that you had that guy.
No, that's a lot of money to put in an inventory that's not going to move too fast.
Yeah, I imagine you'd be sitting on that a while. All right, most of your inventory is no longer manufactured, is it?
Yeah, so on the vintage side of things, really the work is finding inventory. So, you know, it's not like other Shopify stores or like my modern stuff where I can just, you know, go to my supplier and order more. I need to be constantly hunting for the vintage stuff. And what's nice is over the 4 years that I've had the site up, you know, I have a page, obviously, that says, hey, you want to sell your Star Wars stuff? You know, send us a message in a contact form. And that, you know, at the beginning, I'd get like one email a week through there. Now that we're more established that, you know, Google is ranking that page higher, you know, we get multiple a day people coming in that way to sell us their things. And that's way easier than going out and trying to hunt for stuff and, you know, trying to do flea markets or things like that. It's a lot easier to sit back, let stuff come to us, and then pick and choose what we want to purchase.
Okay. And you're I Googled sell Star Wars toys, and sure enough, your first page.
Nice, yeah.
And I love that it leads with like, hey, whether you found, I think the meta description, whether you found a box in the basement or you're a seasoned collector looking to offload, is authenticating items ever an issue? Like, I like vintage toys. My wife collects vintage Barbies, but she did get a reproduction in a replica box once. And in retro gaming, replica cartridges and boxes are now starting to pop up. And they're getting good.
Yeah, so with Star Wars, you know, there's a reproduction carded figures and packaging and stuff. To the seasoned eye, those are pretty easy to catch. But in Star Wars vintage, the biggest problem is the accessories for the vintage figures. So the guns and the lightsabers. And those tend to be worth more than the figures are themselves. So, you know, you have like a $50 vintage figure, probably like $35 of that is usually the accessory it comes with, and the rest is the figure itself. So they've been making knockoffs of those since the 90s, and they've gotten a lot better today with them. So a lot of my time is spent authenticating stuff. When we buy collections online from people who approach us, we don't pay for them until we've received them and processed through the collection. So we I have a good idea when I'm looking through pictures, and you can kind of tell by a collection too what's like someone had as a kid and the range of figures they would have compared to someone who's a collector or like bought stuff in the 90s and is trying to unload it. But yeah, when I get in a collection of loose figures, I got to spend, you know, half an hour to an hour looking through tiny pieces of plastic in a magnifying glass. And luckily, the community's created a lot of great content around that and how to spot stuff, so I can compare and work on it. But yeah, it sucks. And it sucks for customers. Like, I know what it's like. A big part of who we are is that you can trust us, that we never sell any reproduction items. So, you know, everything you buy is 100% original.
What's interesting about vintage toys, like any vintage collectible, the prices jump around. You know, there's not a retail price here. There's not someone setting the price. It's like, all right, what's it going for in marketplaces? What's it going for on eBay? You see this with, you know, vintage cars, baseball cards, vintage toys, whatever it is.
Yeah.
How do you deal with price fluctuations?
So our goal, first of all, is to be at market price, like just be right in the middle at a fair market price, because I prefer to move inventory than sit on it for a long time. So I'd rather move it and get in new inventory, because I think that makes it a lot more interesting for our customers. Luckily, there's a few good resources out there. So there's actually an app called Star Wars Tracker. The guy has built a great app that basically sucks in all the data from eBay and is then kind of filtered. And so with that app, I can go back 6 years worth of pricing data on eBay sales as well as the big auction houses. But then you do get rarer items that it is hard to find a comp. You know, carded figures like the ones behind me, when it comes to vintage, there's a huge difference on what card back it's on. And those could look the exact same to a layman, but there's different variations of each of those card backs. So to find an actual comp on the rare ones is tough. So it's a bit of an art. It's kind of, you look at what comps you think. Condition is so important. So even if you're looking at comps, you got to look at the condition of those comps. And you kind of guess, and then you adjust from there. You know, it's a better to start out a little high, because you can take it down later. But at the same time, I don't want to turn off customers who come in and see overpriced stuff and then just, you know, bounce and leave the site. So it's definitely an art more than a science. And it's totally an experience thing. Like, you see more stuff sell and you have a better idea of what things are going to sell for.
Hey, friends. Today's episode is sponsored in part by Finale Inventory. If managing multiple sales channels makes your head spin, Finale is your solution. Here's Pauline from Finale to tell you more.
We are an inventory management and operations hub, which means that we are helping sellers to manage their inventory, their data, their team, their warehouse operations. Ultimately, the goal of Finale is to prevent overselling.
Finale seamlessly integrates with Shopify, Amazon, and more. It's like a command center for all your omnichannel inventory needs. And for our listeners, Finale offers a special deal.
When you call the team, mention Unofficial 2024, and your listeners can get 20% off their first 3 months with Finale. The great thing about that is that we don't actually offer annual contracts. It's not something we do.
No long-term contracts, just a straightforward solution to streamline your e-commerce operations. Start with a free 2-week trial to see how Finale transforms your inventory management. Visit finaleinventory.com and remember to mention Unofficial 2024 for your exclusive discount. That's it for now. Keep optimizing. Stay tuned. Talk to me about customer engagement, because what's interesting here is, like, collectors are passionate, but it's also, it's very much a community.
Yeah.
And so I think you probably have to engage with them differently than, you know, maybe other businesses.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I'm a member of that community. I'm a collector as well. I was collecting before I started selling and participating in the community. There's definitely a fine line to walk when I'm in the community. Am I like Fourth Moon Mike talking very commercially, or am I like regular Mike being like, hey, that's cool? So I think we definitely want to be part of the community, where I think a lot of other stores just kind of like do their thing and don't want to dip their toe in there because there can be negative consequences. But we want to be one part of the community. We want to be a store that is helping to grow the community and grow collecting and educating newer collectors. So we participate, and then I do stuff on my own within the community, but people in that community know I'm the owner of Fourth Moon Toys. So even though I'm not speaking as Fourth Moon Toys, it kind of all goes back to that trust that people would have with the store when they see me, you know, interacting in a positive way within the community, and they see that, you know, I know what I'm talking about. I've got my own collection. I have the same passion. I actually care about this. I'm not, you know, in it to make a quick buck. This is the slowest way to make a quick buck. So I think community engagement is huge, but it's nice that I can do that from a personal point of view and still have it reflect on the business without having to go in and post. For instance, on Facebook is where a lot of the community is. So I'm leery of, for instance, going into a group and posting something as Fourth Moon Toys, because that's very commercial and that's not what these groups are about. But my presence and my personal posts within those groups does help kind of go back to the business and support that.
So are you self-conscious when you posted forums?
I'm not too self-conscious. Like, I think I, as a collector, I know what annoys me when other people do it. So I just know I'm not going to do that sort of thing. Like, the business is important. The community aspect is just as important to me and like my standing within the community. Cause like, if I, you know, end up a pariah in the community, that's going to hurt the business. And it's also just going to suck for me as a collector. But yeah, it's a very, you know, it's a big community, but it's small at the same point that everyone's kind of on Facebook or going to the same events. So, you know, people have reputations, people talk about people behind their backs and stuff. So yeah, you just don't want to get labeled as like a dude you can't trust or, you know, someone that's in it for themselves.
All right. What's your favorite piece in your collection?
So I always find it hard to say a favorite piece because it changes over time. One really cool piece, and I can just move to it over there, is that big, huge Chewbacca over there. So that's a 4-foot tall, probably store display from the late 70s that was only in Canada, made by Regal Toys. So it's a massive plush Chewbacca. It's got iron bars through it to keep them to be able to stand up. And it's insanely rare and it's worth a hell of a lot of money. It's something I never thought I would own, but I had a customer come into the store. He saw I have a collection of Chewbacca items. He saw that. He had picked it up at a garage sale for probably $1. And he offered it to me at a great price, kind of on the condition that I wasn't reselling it. So I had to go for it, and it's something I never would have had. Another cool item is I have, so our, the store is actually in downtown Toronto in what was an old toy factory called, it was Reliable Toys, and they were one of the world's biggest, this was one of the biggest toy factories in the world kind of post-World War II. And then in the 1980s, it was sold and it's been converted into kind of like business lofts. But I have a R2-D2 bootleg bank that was made by Reliable Toys. So it was made in this building, and I acquired it before I rented the unit. But it's kind of like just a really cool coincidence.
That's super cool.
To have brought it back to this building.
I got goosebumps. Like, that's the flea market cult. Like, the joy of discovery with the vintage stuff and, like, seeking it out and finding something really special or finding something that has a local connection like that. You know, especially when you're deep in collecting, often it's, like, the weird stuff.
Yeah.
That you can get.
That's what I collect mostly is, like food related, like weird stuff. I just picked up a popsicle wrapper from the UK that I'm like working on a run of all those. And those are from 1978. And that someone kept a popsicle wrapper from way back then is like, it's just insane, right? Like,
I have the Princess Leia shampoo complete with tag and the shampoo.
Nice. Yeah. So yeah, even shampoos is something I collect. What's really cool about the business, like often a lot of times people ask me like, you know, does it hurt to sell stuff or to let stuff go? Like, do you ever regret selling it?
And I was going to ask that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty common question. And the thing is, the beautiful part about this business for me as a collector, and I guess my enjoyment of collecting, is it's always been the thrill of the hunt for me has been the funnest part of collecting is finding that stuff, buying it, bringing it back home, you know, emptying the box out when you get mailed something. So it's like, I get to do that part of collecting like nonstop. Like, that's my job and what I've got to do. And I don't have the negative financial consequences of it because I'm selling it. So I've never really regretted anything that I've sold through the store. I definitely, you know, the other advantage is when I pick up a lot, if there's something I really want for my collection, I obviously get first dibs on it. So that definitely does happen. But the thrill of the hunt is really the great part and for me, the most enjoyable part of the job.
And oh yeah, for sure. It is the fun of it. Are there trends or shifts in the collectibles market that you're seeing?
So I think with Star Wars, it's interesting because everyone's with the vintage, everyone's always predicting the end and the end times for vintage. Like, you know, it's going to go the same way that model trains went or, you know, whatever your parents' generation collected that's now like worthless was once worth a whole bunch of money. And so, you know, every kind of collectible goes through that cycle. I think we've still got, you know, kind of the core vintage collector is probably in their early 50s right now. So we've still got a lot of time where these guys have a fair amount of disposable income before they're looking to get rid of stuff. So I think we've still got time there. And then Star Wars, the nice thing about Star Wars is it's so intergenerational. And, you know, I've got kids, they're obviously immersed in Star Wars and have tons of Star Wars stuff. And they gravitate towards different parts of Star Wars that aren't necessarily what I gravitate towards, which is the old school stuff. You know, they like Rebels, the cartoon, or even some of the sequel trilogy characters and stuff like that. And they just naturally gravitate towards that. So I think Star Wars overall, you know, as long as Disney doesn't completely kill it with some really awful content, is probably still got legs for a long time. I think the toy industry is constantly evolving. With the modern stuff, with Star Wars, like, we're really just tied to Hasbro, right? They own the license for most of the toy type things, even though they're all bought by adults. So, you know, Hasbro's had some bad financial times. They've cut production runs on certain items. So we're really tied to how well Hasbro does and hoping that they make good decisions that basically keeps the line profitable for them and keeps them putting stuff out. I think the biggest trend I'm seeing right now is that with the new releases that Hasbro is putting out, you know, obviously their core customers are Target, Walmart, GameStop, Amazon, the really big retailers. And they're really not getting support from those retailers. So a lot of Targets and Walmarts you go into now have no new Star Wars product and haven't had it for months, even though there's new products coming out every month. There's better opportunity for the little guys like us where people can come into store or order them online. And we actually have a, you know, a way to compete with Target and Walmart.
You know, that was one of the fun things that, I think one of the interesting great things that Ty did, sold Beanie Babies in, you know, and started in Oak Brook, Illinois, not far from me. They exclusively sold to small independent retailers.
Yeah, because even with the modern stuff, like I'm still buying collections of that stuff too, not just wholesale from Hasbro. So that's how I'm filling in kind of the back catalog for those products. But it's a lot easier to buy those collections still than it is to find vintage collections to buy.
You ever watch that show, American Pickers?
Yes. Yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's kind of how I like that show. Like the picking was real, but their business was, you know, would only exist as part of the show. It was like part of the production. Sorry, it's a little fake. But that's kind of how I picture it. Like that guy he knew what he was looking for, and he would get so excited when they found something just like oddball, the thrill of that crazy find. But as your network grows and your reputation grows, you get access to better and better opportunities until, you know, it's like American Picker style. You're just loading stuff, boxes and boxes of figures into the back of a trailer.
Exactly. And I think they're a great example too of like, it's all about relationships, right? So I've definitely had people, I just had a lot, for instance, that 50 carded figures from Return of the Jedi. So from 1983, all sealed carded figures. And this guy had approached me 3 years ago to sell this lot. And we had gone back and forth and we were, you know, off by about $500 probably. And in the end, he decided to keep it. And he was just like, you know what? I don't think I'm ready to sell. I'm going to keep it for now. And a month ago, he contacted me again and said, okay, you know, now I'm ready to sell. Let's make a deal. And it was kind of like, well, market isn't quite the same as it was 3 years ago. Disposable income is down and prices are down. But we renegotiated and came to a price he was happy with. But if you treat people well, they will send other people to you, or they will come back when they find more stuff or when their brother finds stuff. So that's a big part of it too. And then a lot of the stuff I buy too comes from customers. So, you know, you as a collector, like you've got something that you're like, man, I'm not super into this anymore. Or I picked up two of them back in the day to have one to sell or whatever. So, you know, a lot of that, especially now that I have retail and people can just walk in with a box of stuff and trade it in and use it as trade value to new stuff. That's probably like 40% of the vintage stuff that comes in is coming in from existing customers.
Have you ever found that sometimes people are just happy to find someone that can like seize the value in the thing that they love?
Yeah, I think so. Like, the straightforward Star Wars stuff, it's fairly easy to figure out a round of value if you look at eBay solds and stuff. But yeah, people appreciate when you value the weird stuff. We're up in Canada, and Canadian vintage Star Wars stuff is actually worth more because it's rarer. Whereas 20 years ago, it was worth less. Now it's worth more because American collectors have bought up, you know, all the American stuff in their collection. So now they need something new to buy. So they buy the Canadian version of it or international versions. So we have an appreciation here, certainly for the Canadian stuff. So people appreciate that coming in. I mean, I think the other thing, too, is like, a lot of stuff comes from childhood collections. So these aren't collectors. These are people who have had this box at their house or their parents' house for 40 years. They have a whole bunch of childhood memories attached to it. And, you know, value, they want to get a good chunk of money, all that. But it's like they have, you know, very pure, important childhood memories tied up in these toys. And it's not really a straight business transaction for them. You know, so, you know, the idea that they're going to a new home, that, you know, we appreciate the fact that they're selling these things and that, you know, we're going to get them out to collectors. We're going to really appreciate them and display them. They're not going to sit in a box anymore. And, you know, just even taking the time with people to like listen to their stories, you know, like they'll tell you about how they remembered picking up this piece, you know, at Woolworths with their mom. And it was like a big deal because it was their birthday or whatnot. I deal a lot with people who are selling stuff from, you know, their parents' estates. So we're definitely getting into that time period where it's
that generational transfer happens, but it's weird.
Yeah, it's a collection, you know, their dad had, and they know nothing about it. They don't want it, like not in a bad way, but, you know, they're not going to dedicate a room to their dad's Star Wars collection in their house. My father's passed on, so I've dealt with estate stuff before from that end. And like, I get it. And I get how like the last thing you want to do is like spend hours negotiating with someone to sell this stuff, but at, you know, the same time you want to get a good amount. So like when I make offers, everyone gets the same offer from me. Stuff goes into a spreadsheet. You know, I output the percentage I want to pay for something, and that's my offer. And I don't usually negotiate from that point, because to me, A is just easier for me. It's like, I don't got to do the work of like, is this guy smart, not smart? What can I do here? And then people just get that it's fair. And, you know, even they'll come back and, you know, say, oh, well, would you do this amount? And it's like $100 more. And I'll just say, you know, like, I put the numbers in the spreadsheet. This is my top number. And people seem to respect that. And I think that's really good, especially when someone is new and doesn't necessarily know the value of it. And they know they can trust you, that you're not going to pull a fast one on them. Like that's huge. And they definitely refer people to me after that.
So I think being upfront and honest and fair pays dividends. And that, like, you could make a quick buck lowballing somebody who doesn't know any better. But, like, long term, that's not helping you.
Exactly. And you don't know who else they're talking to, right? So if you try and pull a fast one on them, you know, there's, like, so for instance, there's R5-D4 is the little droid guy who looks like R2-D2, but he's red. There's a version of him that has a tiny bit of extra red on the label. It's called Red Bar R2-D2. You would never know the difference as a layman ever. But a regular one is worth $20 to $25. One with the little red bar on it is worth $500 to $900, right? So this tiny little line that you would never know. And so I've had those come in collections, and I'll tell people, I'll say, okay, so this one here is super rare and it's worth a lot more than the other ones. Because I don't want them to then, you know, be talking to someone else and they mention that and I've lowballed them without saying it. It's like, I've just lost all the trust right there and lost that deal completely. You know, I'm still going to make money on it because I'm still paying the percent I want and getting the markup I want. So I'm, you know, happy to tell people and educate them on what they have. And it all works out in the end. I'm playing a long game here. I'm not, you know, I want to be around in 5 years. I mean, I remember working at Shopify, like from like day one, Toby was always like, this is a 100-year company. This is like, he's like, we don't even pick up the phone on purchase offers. Like, we are not, like, from day one, he was like, this company's not being sold ever.
I imagine they've had many offers at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, so many, right? And, like, but that was, like, not beaten into our heads, but, you know, whenever there was, you know, all hands meetings to talk about why we were making decisions and stuff, at the back of all of that was, this is a 100-year company. We're building this forever. So we're not making short-term decisions. We're making long-term decisions.
I think a hugely important lesson there. And it's easy to dismiss that, you know, when Toby's saying it, it's like, well, yeah, those guys are billionaires versus, you know, a small business. But same principles, right? It's long-term thinking.
And it's just amazing how it changes what your decisions would be, right? When you're not... It's almost like you're not looking at numbers in a sense, because you're not like, okay, well, I can make $500 more in the next 2 weeks if I do this. It's more of like a gut feeling. You got to be like, well, if I do this, I think it's going to play out better long term and return the value to me. But I don't have an equation that says that.
Did you know that most Shopify stores are leaving 10 to 20% of their revenue on the table with every single purchase? Each year, Shopify merchants make New Year's resolutions to increase profits, but they overlook one crucial aspect, maximizing every order with upsells. That's like breaking your promise on day one. But you could turn that resolution into reality with Zipify One-Click Upsell. One-Click Upsell is the secret weapon Shopify merchants are using to unlock extra revenue on every single sale. I've seen this app transform stores, doubling their revenue. In fact, One-Click Upsell has already helped merchants like you make $500 million in extra upsell revenue for your stores. Zipify OCU is the original Shopify upsell app, and it's been boosting AOV, that's average order value, since 2016 thanks to its seamless integration and intuitive upsell funnels. With the most upsell placements, AI-driven copy suggestions, and mobile-friendly designs, it's no surprise that the average OCU user increases revenue 10 to 15% as soon as they set up the app. The new year brings new opportunities, my friend. So start your 2024 strong with the app that makes your revenue goals a reality. Zipify One-Click Upsell. Go to Zipify.com/Kurt and start your 30-day free trial today. That's Zipify.com/KURT to try Zipify one-click upsell for free. Don't just make resolutions, make profits. Add Zipify one-click upsell today and kick off the new year with a lot more sales. You're ex-Shopify, early Shopify. You're running a Shopify store. What theme are you on?
Oh, God. And this is the sad part. I'm on a 1.0 Dawn theme.
I'm choking up my water. You're on Dawn pre 2.0. We'll call it a classic theme.
Yeah, it's retro. It's vintage. And it's literally like, you know, I hacked it together 4 years ago before I launched and probably have touched two or three things on it since then. And I know every problem that it has. And I'm working myself on a Dawn 2.0 reboot of it. But I mean, I specifically, and that's why I'm picking Dawn 2.0 for the next theme is, I don't want bells and whistles. I want straightforward Amazon before Amazon got crazy, look to the site. My competition is all bells and whistles. It's dark backgrounds with star fields and animated GIFs of figures moving around and, you know, crazy stuff going on everywhere. So I'm very purposely like white background, square images of items on a white background, and you know, I let the product speak without all the other mumbo jumbo. I run apps in the background to do things that help me run the business. But I'm not doing like countdown timers and like, you know, fancy weird stuff like that.
And on the front end of the site, there's really very few, if any, apps.
Like the obvious, like Klaviyo, Judge Me. I have a variant, like a variant picker app that I don't even know if it's still necessary, but just to allow me to, so I have to have, with the vintage stuff, I have to have pictures of every single item, even if it's the same item. Even if I have five of the same item, I need to have pictures of all five of them because it's all about condition, right? And people want to know what they're getting. So I have a variant picker app that helps, separate the variants and link the right images to it. I think that's about all the front end apps that are really going on there.
Yeah, it's been kept intentionally simple, and I think there's a lot of value in that. And it makes it easy to navigate and get around, and it's fast. You know, things aren't breaking. You're not playing quite so much e-commerce whack-a-mole.
Yeah, I think I've always gotten good comments from customers on the site because it is different from all the others. And I just want to get out of the way and let people buy. I mean, I have a very low conversion rate, but that's partly because people kick the tires a lot to figure out what shipping is on stuff and all that. I recently shifted to like a free shipping threshold just to kind of make my life easier and to make that conversion a bit easier.
And are you do you do free shipping? Because you're shipping from Canada. I imagine you're getting a lot of US orders.
Yeah, so online stores 90% of our sales right now. Retail's only 10, and but growing. We're only like 5 months into it. 70% of online would be US, 20% Canadian, and then 10% is UK, EU, and Australia. Luckily for us in Canada, we've a lot of infrastructure has been built for e-commerce like us, so I can ship to the States for cheaper than I can ship to most Canadian places. And I can ship faster than most American e-commerce stores because we have cross-border shippers here, which what that is so I have a company that I buy my postage through them, prints out USPS labels, FedEx labels, whatever. Then I drop it off basically at a corner store that's a block away from here. They pick it up every day. They drive it over the border and drop it into the USPS sorting facility in Niagara Falls. So it goes directly into the sorting facility the same night I drop it off. Which means that, for East Coast people, they'll have it in a day or 2 days, almost max. So it's actually good. I pay about 50 cents to a dollar, depending on the size of the package, as the fee for that, which is totally reasonable. you know? And then what's actually cool is, so that company figured out, we got a whole bunch of empty trucks coming back from Niagara Falls every day. Wouldn't it be cool to fill them up with stuff? So they offer a P.O. box service where I get all my U.S. shipments sent to a P.O. box there. Then they toss it in the truck, bring it up to Toronto, and I pick it up here in Toronto for $5 a package.
I've heard that that's not unusual for Canadians who live near the border to do this.
But yeah, it's definitely an industry now, because yeah, there would be absolutely no way I could compete otherwise. Without like, that service is my killer app. Without that, I could not exist.
All right, I want your advice. If someone is looking to start a collectibles business, what's the one thing they need to know?
So I would say number one, do what you're passionate about, not what everyone else is doing. You know, I was told a million times when I started up this selling nothing but vintage Star Wars that like, there's no way that that's going to work. You need to sell every kind of toy there is to have the biggest, broadest customer base. And that's the only way it's going to work. Where I was like, well, would it be cooler to like have, and this is a Seth Godin thing, right? It's better to have 100, loyal followers than 10,000 people who don't really give a crap. So I would say do what you're actually passionate about, because then you're going to actually enjoy it and you're going to enjoy coming in every day. And then just create relationships. You know, our business is all about repeat customers. The long-term value, I mean, I haven't like fully calculated it out, but if I can get someone to 2 purchases, chances are on their own, they're going to go for the 5 to 10 purchases over the next year. I've got lots of customers with 30, 40, 50 purchases in their history. You know, people who have spent more than 10 grand with me over the past couple of years through multiple orders. So collectors want to buy stuff. You just need to find the stuff and then get out of their way and get it to them. So, you know, as long as you can do that and you make someone happy once or twice, they're going to keep coming back, because buying stuff everywhere else is a pain in the ass.
That is fabulous advice. For you, what's the most rewarding part of running this business?
So, I mean, it's fun just to play with the stuff that you enjoy as a hobby. But I think since opening retail's been like, opening the retail part of things is something like I now wish I had done a long time ago. And I love the freedom of the online store and like coming in whenever I want and working from wherever, all that sort of fun stuff. And we're open, you know, Wednesday to Saturdays. So we're not open every day, and that's on purpose. But actually interacting with humans and your customers and talking to them and seeing what they like, even just watching how they browse stuff and what piques their interest and what doesn't, is just like, it's a whole other world to selling online, where it's like, boop, 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 order prints out. And it's like, okay, this person wants this, and I send it off to them. And hopefully they leave a review on Judge Me, and that's like the end of our interaction. Whereas with the in-store, it's like, it's so much more interesting to watch people, to talk to people and find out what they're into. And, you know, for me, the modern stuff is something I don't collect. So I don't know a ton about it. You know, I know it because I know Star Wars, I know who the characters are and stuff like that. But to see the different ways, you know, someone who collects the Black Series, which is the more premium Hasbro line, 6-inch, you know, figures are more expensive as compared to these guys behind me, which is the vintage collection. They're a very different group of collectors. And I never would have sussed that out without talking to people and seeing them and seeing like, okay, if someone's between 20 and 35, they're going straight to the Black Series wall. If they're 40 and over and collect modern, then they're going over to this stuff, because this stuff looks like the old stuff, right? It's in the same scale as the vintage stuff. So the guys who grew up...
I'm 41. I go for the black stuff, the black label.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So there's a bit of variation there, but it's like... I'm on the cusp. It's interesting. It does fall along those lines, definitely. But yeah, it's almost like affirming and... it just gives you energy. The retail side of things, where I thought it would have been more of an energy suck, it gives you energy. And like, you know, I have like amazing customers. I try and give people freebies. Like, our business is all about discounts and freebies, and the price is never the price. And I don't love discounting, so I'd rather give people free stuff. But you know, I have customers refuse free things or say, or like they will pay for them even when I'm offering it to them for free, because they're like, I want you to be in business. Like, I want to be able to keep coming here, and I know it isn't easy. So like, don't discount. I'm willing to pay a full price. I just want to support you doing this.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. I don't think probably a lot of other Shopify stores get that.
Yeah. Well, you can't beat that, that in-person interaction, but having someone tell you like, no, this is so great, I refuse your discount, is like the most fabulous thing in the world. Where could people go to learn more about you?
All right. So first of all, they could go to the website, fourthmoontoys.com. And then we're on Facebook and Instagram, of course, and just search Fourth Moon Toys. And if you're in Toronto or you're visiting Toronto, we're at 276 Carlaw. We're up on the second floor, unit 202A. So we're not a street front. We're actually in a big industrial former toy factory up on the second floor. And we're open Wednesdays to Saturdays, 12 to 6, so they can come there. And if you're looking to sell something, you can definitely hit me up. We've got a form on our website. And if you're into collecting Star Wars, you know, you want to support a Shopify store rather than Walmart, come on over.
That was perfect. Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.